come down from Glasgow this evening to join us. He's been involved in the Stop War Coalition for many years. He's a socialist and anti-war activist based in Glasgow, as I say, and he's going to speak for about 15 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we'll take some questions and discussion, share our ideas together. So, Jonathan.
Brilliant. I might not even take the full 15 minutes, but hopefully say some things alongside Anne, I believe, to get the discussion going. When Alex talked about the divisions that are taking place in the US state around strategy, about where to go, I think we see them writ large when it comes to Brexit in the UK state. And it's quite funny, I got a taxi from the station to here. I was running late after work. I had to get a later train. I thought, I'll jump in a taxi. And I get in, and it's a taxi driver who starts asking me about where I'm going. I say, well, I'm going to a Stop the War meeting. And he said, right, okay, that sounds a bit political. And I says, well, what do you think about Brexit? And he says, well, I think we should just get on with it. And just at that moment, someone phoned him up in his taxi, said, do you mind if I take this? And it was one of his friends. And we've had this three-way discussion. and it was all about Brexit. And it was actually a very friendly discussion. People had different views. And his friend had phoned up. And to be honest, he was a bit of a Farage type of you know, supporter. However, I have to say that, you know, it was all in good nature. The driver happened to be a Pakistani man, and he was clearly friends with this guy who'd phoned up, Stevie, in case anyone's wondering. And actually, what was quite interesting was that we kind of finished discussion, and I said, what did you think about the war in Iraq? Because we're talking about all the political leaders and that sort of thing. And both of them said it was an outrage and it should never have happened. And it kind of struck me that actually, in England in particular, you'll probably know that in Scotland, the majority voted to remain in the European Union. Everyone's got their own view about that. But it struck me that actually Stop the War Coalition, the anti-war movement, is a place where, regardless of your view on the European Union or on Brexit or any of these kind of questions, that there's a whole space to build much needed unity, actually, in the country, and over a very progressive and left-wing question, which is, of course, war. And it's, I think, been interesting to trace how this develops. I mean, it's far away from a lot of the politicians in Westminster, but lots of working class communities in the UK were directly affected. In Glasgow, I did a lot of work alongside the Stop the War Coalition of Military Families Against the War with the Gordon Gentles, mum Rose Gentle, who some of you may have heard of. And Rose was a fantastic campaigner and still is. She lost her son in that one. Actually, in Pollock, in Glasgow, one of the poorest places in Glasgow, that sent shockwaves right across the community. And of course, this happens up and down the country. So actually, the Iraq war has played a huge role in the present political circumstances that we see today. And it seems to me that not only is it a point of unity, but actually a point of necessity. I mean, when you see Tony Blair touring the TV studios as if he's, you know, got nothing to apologise for anymore, as if that has been forgotten about, it tells us that we need now more than ever an anti-war movement. And also because of things like Iran. Because I think that I'm not going to go through all the detailed analysis that was previously given, which was a fantastic kind of overview of all of the different facets of that. But just to say that some of those issues that I've kind of already touched on also transcend to the United States, where actually lots of the military families, lots of ordinary working people, in fact the population in general, is war weary. That actually they don't want, I believe, to be in a position where they're putting more boots on the ground, where they're involved in situations like Iraq, like Afghanistan. Afghanistan, by the way, I think is the longest running war in the whole of US history. And in fact, more than a number of wars combined, the Vietnam War, their intervention in World War II. That tells you a lot about where US power lies just now. So I think when it comes to Trump and the sacking of Bolton, that's partly connected to it. That yes, there's this split in the state, right? I mean, actually, Hillary Clinton, let's be clear about this, was far more gung-ho when it came to the question of Iran, and who knows where we might be. So the point of the matter here is to understand that what Trump's probably thinking is not that he's got some altruistic view about Iran, of course, right? But that actually probably doesn't play well coming up to an election. And I think that is down to the legacy, in large part, of the anti-war movement. The fact that there was an anti-war movement that managed to sustain itself over a period of years, that the war was seen to be so thoroughly demolished in terms of its moral capacity, in terms of its capacity, even in its own terms, it's failed. And I think that has really pushed Trump towards coming up to an election saying to himself, well, if I'm going to start a war with Iran, then I think that's probably going to pay badly in the polls. We should remember about John Bolton, that he was part of a grouping of people who were behind the Project for a New American Century. And it's interesting to just look at that for a second, because that was a document and that was a really grand strategy for where the US was going in the world, which was meant to be something that would last up to 50 years. I think we remember George Bush talking about a 50-year war on terror. And this was an attempt, of which Iran was really in the crosshairs, this was an attempt to go after the axis of evil under the cover of the war on terror, and in their view, to reorder global affairs in the image of US power. And how they have failed to manage to achieve this is quite staggering. Of course, it's not surprising to those who opposed the war. We knew an occupation in Iraq, for example, would go down like a lead balloon. We knew that there would be opposition inside Iraq to that kind of occupation. But we also find ourselves in a situation where the world order as we understood it in 2003 has so radically changed. And I think one of the things we need to discuss as a movement is how does that intersect? That the world has changed so dramatically since 2003, not just with the question of Brexit, but the post-2008 economic situation. The fact that we are seeing a real polarisation between left and right across the West, that we are also seeing the potential of another financial crisis overlapping on to the present political conditions. And things are changing. And Jeremy Corbyn has been mentioned, but I just wanted to reflect on that as well, because I think this whole argument I'm trying to make is about the need to rebuild and to maximise the potential of the anti-war movement, is that Jeremy Corbyn offers a solution to the economic injustice that we face. He offers a solution to the question of war and peace. He's a well-known, of course, anti-war activist and so on. All of that exists. That opportunity exists right now in these torrid political conditions because of the anti-war movement. And that has to be underlined and understood, because had it not been for the Stop the War Coalition and the anti-war movement and its development all those years ago, back in 2001, when it was formed to oppose the war on terror and everything that came from it, then the energy that was behind the grassroots movement that propelled Jeremy Corbyn to the leader of the Labour Party is, I think, very important to understand. This, by the way, is why Tony Blair is back in the TV screens. Of course, it's ostensibly about Brexit, but he cannot bear the idea that Jeremy Corbyn is leader of the Labour Party. None of them can. And not because it's just because it's Jeremy Corbyn, but because he is an ambassador, in my opinion. He's an ambassador and an advocate for the Stop the War Coalition and the anti-war cause in this country. The mere fact that he's leader is absolutely repulsive to people like Tony Blair and others. And just imagine for a second how they might behave if he was to become the Prime Minister. That, in fact, if an ambassador of the anti-war movement was to become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom in the present political conditions. And that, I think, just spells out the opportunities that lie ahead here. You know, we have been building a movement around the war for a long time now. And lots of people, and you've probably heard it before as well, lots of people have said, well, you know, people marched, but they didn't stop the war. right? And therefore, you know, really, was that not a bit of a failure? Well, actually, look at it. Precisely because we marched in such numbers, I believe we have prevented or staved off, at the very least, another war with Iran. Because that was their plan. That was the plan of the Project for the New American Century, of people like John Bolton, of people like Tony Blair. They wanted to go for Iran as well. I remember reading pamphlets at the time and going to meetings at the time in 2004, 2005, all about Iran and about how that was coming next. And so we have to take a great deal of inspiration from our own movement, from the fact that we did come together and collectively organise. And John Bolton has been sent packing, yes, by Donald Trump. Lindsay German has got a good sort of bite-sized analysis on the Stop the War website, which is very simply saying that, you know, good news that John Bolton's gone, and I think everyone can relate to that. But let's be under no illusions about where the US state and US imperialism might go next. Because yes, there's an election coming up, but can you imagine that Trump gets elected again and what he might do with his remaining 4 years in power? Can you imagine how that might look in the global context if it comes alongside the kind of economic crisis that we've seen in 2008 coming round again in a re-energised financial crisis that is more difficult to deal with because so many of the levers which they attempted to deal with it have already been expended? Then where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us in a situation where the global state system is fractured along these competitive lines economically, and that often can spill into direct military conflict. I was part of a Stop the War contingent that marched in Edinburgh at the 2005 meeting of the G8 summit, and that was the year where we had Make Poverty History. I don't know if people remember that. It's quite some time ago now, but if you're too young to remember it, thanks for making me feel old. But that was a huge demonstration, and we were part of building an anti-war, an international anti-war contingent on it. And I remember going to a meeting. This was, you know, I just started getting involved in politics. I knew very little, and obviously we're always learning. But I went to a meeting that described the G8 as a band of warring brothers. Mm. And this is, you know, an old line that many might have heard. And I remember thinking, yeah, but they seem so solid, they seem so together, they seem to be moving in one direction, they seem to be co-joined in their thinking about how the economy should function, so on and so forth. Well, fast forward, and Russia's no longer part of these summits and discussions. You know, fast forward, the wars that were fought in Iraq and Afghanistan have turned out to be absolute failures. The question of poverty doesn't just persist, it's become entrenched. And it's become a question not of third world debt and so on and so forth, though that remains. It's become a question of people in Flint, Michigan don't have clean drinking water. But we are seeing a system now which is failing, even on its own terms. We are seeing these wars that have failed on their own terms, and in a sense, that's a great opportunity, as I've tried to outline, but also that's where the danger is as well. Because I can very easily see that this situation unravels out of the control of, you know, we think these people at the top of society is in control. I mean, if Brexit's done one thing, it's shown that they're definitely not. And you don't know where this is going to go, other than to say that we're entering a very dangerous phase when it comes to the question of war and of military conflict. And I think it's for those two reasons, both the opportunity that exists and this real and serious threats that exist, then that's why we need to continue to build and to really rebuild the anti-war movement. I say rebuild because up in Glasgow, our group's been quite dormant for a while. We are starting to rebuild it again. And so I'll report to people in Glasgow about this meeting. Because one of the things that was so important about it was a truly national movement that had local roots but came together in national conferences and demonstrations and so on. My last couple of points, and then I'll be quiet, is that the thing that really drew me towards Stop the War, and I think this was the case for lots of people, was that it had a very clear-sighted analysis that it was opposed to the war, in Iraq and Afghanistan. But there were two other elements in particular that, that struck me. That was opposition to attacks on civil liberties and opposition to Islamophobia. And it was the understanding that these things interacted with each other. That the war on our democracy, Prevent campaign, for example, in universities, the increased surveillance, the detention without trial, all of these kinds of things, this attack on civil liberties. And it seems to me that when you look at what's happening today, we see that happen in quite an amplified way. I think the anti-war movement has got something to say about our democracy. We protested in 2003 and showed that the democratic system had failed back then. We didn't want war, and yet we were taken to war. But more than that, we said that civil liberties were going to come under attack under the guise of the war on terror. And that's what's happened. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see the kind of rhetoric that we saw in the war on terror come back with a vengeance over the question of what's going to happen with Brexit. Because really, either outcome of that, the right wing and the Conservative Party and all, and actually, you know, the people around Tony Blair and all these sorts of people, they're all going to go down this line of an attack, on an amplified attack on civil liberties, and then on Islamophobia. That we all know that the sharp end of racism in this country, in Europe and in America, is against Muslims. And they have a playbook for this, which is very simple. That you attack Muslims because they've been so demonised as a result of the war on terror for so many years now that they're an easy target. And if you can get people turning on Muslims, then you can get them to buy into a wider far-right agenda. That's basically what we face. And it seems to me that on that question as well, the anti-war movement has something very important, very specific to say. So I'll just end then... with that, and just to say that thanks to Alex for the invite down, I look forward to the discussion. I'm going to feed the discussion that we have here back to the organising meeting we're going to have in Glasgow. It'd be great actually if we could build a relationship between our groups and you know, exchange speakers and that sort of thing. I think it's always a good experience for people. And with that, the opportunities and the threats in our heads and brought together by the anti-war movement.
Thank you. Thank you to both Anne and Jonathan for giving us a huge amount to think about. And in terms of discussion, obviously, if you want to say something or ask something specifically about threats to Iran and the situation in relation to that, great. But also there's a whole number of wider issues around war.